From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, a primary win may help Republicans keep control of the state Senate. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on some of the primary results and the Moral Monday movement comes to the state capitol. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. A win by a candidate in a four-way primary for the state Senate seat this week may help Republicans keep control of the New York State Senate in the long run. In the first of two stories this week, the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
Maricel Alcantara won the Upper Manhattan seat. She's a Democrat, but Alcantara has said if elected to the Senate in November, she won't join the regular Democrats, but will likely ally with the breakaway Democratic faction known as the Independent Democratic Conference. Bob Bellafiore, with the group New Yorkers for Independent Action, says it's a win for maintaining the current balance of power in Albany, because the breakaway Democrats have in the past formed a coalition government with Republicans, and they've not ruled out doing that again.
The regular Democrats take control of the state Senate for the first time in decades. It would have to be a massive, wholesale, Watergate-like sweep away of the Republicans, which I don't think anybody expects in 2016.
The Independent Expenditure Group supports school choice for low-income children. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Meanwhile, local Republican Party chairmen in New York have picked a replacement to fill a position formerly held by a GOP lawmaker who won his primary election this week, days after killing himself. GOP chairman from Monroe, Livingston, and Steuben counties selected former State Assemblyman Joseph Irigo will replace the late Bill Nojay on the November 8th ballot in the Republican-leaning 133rd Assembly District, which represents parts of suburban Rochester in the Finger Lakes region. To New York's Capital Region, where two candidates for the New York State Assembly, backed by the Republican establishment, won their primary contests this week. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard has that story.
Republicans battled for their party's nomination in the 112th and 113th Assembly districts on Tuesday. Appearing alongside Assemblyman Jim Tedisco, who secured a spot on the ballot for November's state Senate race in the 49th, Mary Beth Walsh claimed victory in the race for Tedisco's current 112th district seat. Walsh, an attorney from Ballston, took home 52% of the vote and said she would continue her momentum to November.
I should be in good shape. I'm going to run as hard as I have so far. I agree absolutely with Jim Tedisco. I've learned a lot from campaigning with him over the last couple months. I've learned a lot about maintaining energy and getting out and really communicating genuinely and clearly to the voters.
Walsh outspent her primary rival, Jim Fisher, a small business owner from Burnt Hills who ran an unsuccessful race against Democratic Congressman Paul Tonko 2 years ago.
You know, as much as I enjoy it, and I think I'd make a good servant of the people, that, you know, the voters have made that decision.
Fisher said he was up against the power of the party in the GOP race.
You know, they can exert their will, so that's what happened here. So, it's the way it works.
Fisher said he would support Walsh this fall. Much of the district lies over suburban Schenectady and Saratoga counties, reliably Republican territory. Walsh will face Glenville Democrat Michael Godlewski in November. In the neighboring 113th district in Washington and Saratoga counties, party-backed Chris Boyark secured the GOP nomination with 58% of the vote. Boyark, who has never held elected office, was chosen over fellow newcomer Gerard Moser. In a statement, Boyark said he was humbled by the support he was given on the campaign trail. He said after meeting voters, quote, "There is a real sense by many that our government no longer works for them. This campaign has never been about me. Instead, it's about bringing sanity back to the halls of our corrupt capital so we can once again concentrate on the priorities we all share," unquote. Boyark also congratulated his primary opponent. Moser said he thought he did well despite the loss.
"For a bunch of folks that had never done this before, I think we did a great job."
Moser said he hoped Boyark would take back the seat currently held by Democrat Kerry Warner for the Republican Party, which is a small minority in the assembly. Warner, who has held the office for 2 years, was elected following the retirement of Republican Tony Jordan, who then became Washington County District Attorney. In other regional assembly contests, Republican incumbent Carl Brabenek deflected a challenge from Monroe resident John Allegro in the 98th District. Allegro may appear on the November ballot on the United Monroe line, pending the outcome of a court case. On the Democratic side, Rockland County's Aaron Weider defeated Crystal Serrano. Democratic incumbent Ellen Jaffe won her primary in the 97th District against Thomas Gullah. In the 94th District, Republican Kevin Byrne bested Suzanne McDonough.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Perhaps one of the most important races in the country right now that are being watched is the 19th Congressional District between Zephyr Teachout, the Democrat, and John Faso, the Republican.
Zephyr Teachout gained a lot of fame when she ran against Andrew Cuomo in a primary and beat him in most, if not all, of the upstate counties, I think with the exception of Buffalo. But she did extraordinarily well, and she became a hero of the moderate left in the Democratic Party, as well as many other people, because she became immediately sort of known as a giant killer. Now she's running for Chris Gibson's seat, as is John Faso. I've known both of them. I've interviewed both of them over the years. And it's going to be a fascinating fight because the district does tend to go a little bit Republican, although the registration is fairly easy. So it's going to be what we call in politics a fair fight.
Well, Alan, we had primaries this week. Perhaps one of the most interesting things was that of Assemblyman Nojay, who killed himself, committed suicide shortly before the primary. All the Republicans, the GOP in the Rochester area, urging people to vote for him despite having done that, and he won.
Well, yes. Here's what happened. The Republican establishment, who wanted to pick the eventual candidate, told everybody to vote for this guy who was passed. He was dead. He had committed suicide in a cemetery right before he was supposed to be interviewed by the FBI and other criminal investigating units for possible misconduct during his business career. So in any case, he commits suicide. The three county chairmen come out and say, vote for him anyway. That will allow us to name the candidate as opposed to the guy that he is running against. He was a beloved figure, and people came out and voted either because they wanted to salute him or because they wanted the county chairman to have that power, and did it. And he prevails, and they're going to pick the candidate. Only in America.
Let's talk presidential election when it comes to New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman, Alan. The Attorney General says his office has been investigating Donald Trump's charity to determine whether the foundation has abided by state laws governing nonprofits. That elicited a quick response from Trump that Schneiderman is a political hack. Schneiderman's now out defending that this week, and he says this is something that goes back many, many months, and when someone breaks the rules, his job is to stop it.
Well, good for him. He's doing the right thing, and of course they're going to react the way that they're reacting. Why wouldn't they do that? They'll say he's a political hack. But if you examine the politics of the situation, if it's just purely political, and I don't think it is, by the way, then he's on the side of Hillary Clinton, and he is doing what he has to do in a very close election. But I don't think that's really what's happening. I think what's happening here is that Trump really has a serious problem. There have been accusations, substantial accusations, about Trump's behavior with Trump University. Schneiderman is doing what he has to do according to the law. And of course, every time anybody is prosecuted, they're going to say there's a political motivation, you know, for it. This may, of course, be one of the straws that breaks the camel's back. We don't know. But we do know that there is enough serious material in this approach and the approach of others, that and other states, by the way, that this lawsuit has to be taken very seriously.
Perhaps one of the most ironic things to occur, perhaps what could become one of the most ironic things to occur in the state legislature happened this week and going forward. Longtime Capital Region Assemblyman Jim Todisco defeated his challenger to attain the retiring Hugh Farley seat from the 49th Senate District. And as you have pointed out all week, Alan, the man who's been in the minority could end up staying in the minority.
First of all, let me just say, I really like Jim Todisco. He's been a friend for many, many years. I've interviewed him hundreds of times on the air. I don't always agree with him, but I got to tell you, he is a clever man, and he quite frequently comes up with quite simple fixes to governmental things. He'll put the bill in, and the Democrats will inevitably steal it in what is called bill napping. So he is a guy, he's got a lot of political courage, he's got moxie. All of these years, he's labored in the Republican minority in New York State Assembly, where he just can't get anything done because he's in the minority. And what has been said about that minority is that they have the power of warm spit. Nevertheless, he now has his chance. He's been waiting for all these years to run for the Senate. Hugh Farley has been there for 40 years. Hugh Farley now moves aside, endorses Todisco, although there had been, according to some reports, some tension between the two men. I don't think a lot over the years, because everybody knew that Todisco was extremely ambitious and wanted to get into the majority where he would have some power in the state Senate. Well, now, of course, this is going to be an election which Hillary Clinton is going to be doing very well in New York. A lot of voters are going to come out. And there is a feeling that maybe the state Senate will go Democratic finally, especially if Andrew Cuomo does what he says he wants to do and brings in a Democratic Senate. There are many people, including me, who don't really believe that. So if, in fact, that happens, he gets into the majority. If it doesn't happen, and if the Democrats sweep, he's going to find himself, after all these years, back in the minority.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Religious and labor advocates rallied at the state capitol this week as part of a nationwide movement known as Moral Mondays to urge state lawmakers to take more progressive stances on issues. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt was there.
The Reverend Emily McNeil, who heads the New York Labor Religion Coalition, says her group is not as concerned about the topics promoted by the evangelical right, including opposition to abortion and gay marriage. She says instead, her groups are focusing on helping the poor, battling global warming, and increasing voter participation.
Anti-poverty, anti-racist policies that build up economic democracy through employment and living wages, the alleviation of disparate unemployment, a just transition away from fossil fuels, labor rights, affordable housing, direct cash transfers and social safety nets, and other support for all families struggling to get by, and fair policies for immigrants.
McNeil and around 100 others gathered at the steps of the state capitol. They later delivered a letter to lawmakers outlining their concerns. The movement is part of what they call the Moral Revival, begun by Reverend William Barber of North Carolina. The state legislature is not currently in session, and Governor Cuomo was in New York City for the day. Tuesday is primary day for state legislative races, and all senators and assembly members are up for election in November. Despite that, labor organizer Joe Paparone says he hasn't heard much about any of the issues that his group cares about in the campaigns for state Senate and assembly.
We're looking for leaders who will take strong moral stands. We're in a time of divisiveness and vitriol that is unseen in my lifetime. And what is required of our leaders is to take strong moral stands in defense of the poor, in defense of immigrants, in defense of the environment. And we're just not seeing that consistently.
Paparone says the groups aren't deterred by the lack of response so far.
It's a strange situation in New York, but we're not going to go away. We're going to keep coming back. We've been holding Moral Monday actions here at the Capitol for the past few years. We'll continue to do that. We're going to continue to keep bringing more people here to the Capitol and also around the state. The people are on the move, and they're tired of living in poverty in the most unequal state in the nation. Any degree of poverty is really an affront to moral values.
In the past legislative session, concluded in June, Governor Cuomo and lawmakers enacted some new laws that the group support, including a phased-in minimum wage increase to $15 downstate and $12.50 upstate, and partial paid family leave. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. An effort to establish a town in Orange County, New York, took a step forward with the delivery of a petition to the county legislature. Village of Kirios Joel leaders are initiating the process. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn has details.
Village of Kirios Joel leaders Monday delivered a petition with signatures for more than 2,400 Monroe residents to establish the town of North Monroe. They say 650 signatures were required. The leaders say they will press forward with all efforts to fully secede from the town of Monroe, and the petition is the first step in the process. In a statement, Kirios Joel Village Administrator Gedalia Zegedin says, quote, "We believe that this is the most practical and reasonable solution to resolving a long-standing issue in our region, recognizing the different needs of both communities and allowing each community to coexist in peace and harmony," end quote. Grassroots organization United Monroe has been a staunch opponent of Kirios Joel's current proposal to annex 507 acres, a proposal that has been challenged and is still in court. Emily Convert is United Monroe chairwoman.
The concept of a North Monroe is simply a backdoor to the annexation.
Zegedin says the split will allow each new town to decide which public and community services and facilities it finds desirable. For example, he says the new town would facilitate the consolidation of the local fire districts, as well as the alteration of the school district boundaries between the Monroe-Woodbury and Kirios Joel school districts. Democratic Assemblyman James Skoufis has long spoken out against the annexation proposal, and when the town of North Monroe idea became public in mid-August, Skoufis had the following reaction.
The one benefit is that it would remove the block vote or block votes from town of Monroe elections.
Convert also sees this as a positive, with a caveat.
And yeah, it is great that the KJ leadership wouldn't have undue influence over town board members, and that's a huge issue in our town right now. But not at the expense of all these hundreds of rural acres, which would immediately become high density. We already have water and sewer concerns.
Skoufis says if the town of North Monroe concept is a backdoor to annexation, then he would strongly oppose the effort.
The timing is very curious. Why is this being presented and advanced in parallel to the annexation case that is in court right now?
Kirios Joel officials have previously said that they need to expand, as do many communities, and take issue with the type of opposition they face. The petition documents include reasons for the proposed change and state that Monroe is Orange County's most populous town, with 45,000 residents, more than 60% of whom reside in Kirios Joel and its vicinities on the north side of Route 17. The vast majority of the village's residents are Satmar Hasidic Jews, who choose a lifestyle in high-density development, close to friends and family who share the same culture and language. Conversely, many residents in the town of Monroe living on the south side of Route 17 seek a more rural lifestyle with low-density development and have opposed growth within the village of Kirios Joel and its expansion through annexation. The statement continues that a new town of North Monroe will allow both communities to retain their characters and identities and choice to develop as desired. The petition says that the town of Monroe contains 13,632 acres of land and, after the proposed split, would contain 12,550.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
An annual report assessing policy affecting the Adirondack Park has just been issued by the Adirondack Council. This year, it's largely positive, driven by the state's acquisition of wilderness lands and investment in the Environmental Protection Fund. We get more from the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley.
The Adirondack Council has been issuing its State of the Park report since 1986. Although there are a few format changes, the 2016 document, Ready for Wilderness, remains largely the same, providing thumbs up or down on issues and actions that impact the Adirondack Park. Overall, Adirondack Council Executive Director Willie Janeway calls it a very positive review.
There is a lot of positive things that happened, and we're poised for some huge historic positive victories for expanded wilderness. There are some specific thumbs down for issues, but overall, things are going in a positive direction, and there were some huge successes in the last year for the Adirondack Park and for the Adirondack North Country region.
Janeway says key actions over the course of the past year include the full funding of the state's Environmental Protection Fund to $300 million and the completed acquisition of 161,000 acres of Adirondack lands.
That spike of investments is part of the governor and the legislature agreeing that the Adirondacks are a real national treasure and an asset for us here in New York. 10 million visitors a year, that brings a lot of people a lot of money, and we can have a win-win. We can expand wilderness protection and improve protection for clean water in the Adirondack North Country and have that be a boost for communities. But all is not rosy. There are some issues in the report where we flag some concerns. There's a lot of thumbs up, but there are a significant number of issues that we also give a thumbs down to. And when we look ahead, we hope those get corrected next year.
The council gave thumbs up on tourism promotion efforts, the Remsen to Lake Placid rail-to-trail compromise, invasive species prevention, and the confirmations of DEC Commissioner Basil Sagos and three Adirondack Park Agency commissioners. Thumbs down include short staffing at the APA and DEC, some motorized vehicle approvals, and federal delays in fighting climate change. Council Communications Director John Sheehan says the report illustrates the link between the environment and the park's local communities.
People coming to the park are going to expect that they will have pure water to drink and that the sewer system won't be polluting the river or the lake that they're coming to visit. We need to make investments in those communities to make sure that they have the facilities that are necessary for people to get into them, to have a place to stay, to have a place to eat, and have an opportunity to benefit from having a forest preserve right next door. I think a lot of what we're trying to accomplish with the expansion of wilderness is also community development, and that they can go hand in hand and really do in the Adirondacks.
While some issues were perennial or predictable, Janeway was surprised to discover that the report indicates the park's water is not as clean as it should be.
We are seeing degradation of water quality in some places. Sometimes it's invasive species, sometimes it's runoff, phosphorus, sometimes it's road salt. And those threats to water quality and challenges for compliance with the Clean Water Act, we realize that hasn't received a lot of attention, and going forward it needs to receive more.
A link to the report is at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1638. Or just listen to our podcast on the web at WAMC.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.